Hello, and thank you so much for joining me for today's podcast. I am super excited because I have a really, really wonderful designer who's going to be sharing some great insights and really her story, her ups and downs, and how she did it, how she built a successful brand. And in a few minutes, we're going to be talking to Maria Busted from Pocampo. And she'll tell you all about the business. And I just want to thank you for coming to the podcast. It's the only podcast that I know about, and I'm thinking that you know about, that's for the business side of fashion. So thanks for joining me, and really, actually, for emerging designers on the business side of fashion, just so we get that straight. So today we're going to be talking about how she did it. Sort of my diary of a designer series that I'm just starting, and I'd love to know what you think about it. And there is a lovely woman here in Chicago, Maria, who I'm going to pull out here in a second, who is so, so good at what she does and so honest and so lovely and produces a product that is so kick-ass that I couldn't resist having her on. Okay, so Maria, are you there?
I'm here. Hi, Jane.
Hi. Thank you so much for coming on today.
I'm delighted to be here. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, you are really one of my honest to gosh muses and role models in, you know, what your business looks like and how you run it and just even just your attitude. So I'm super pumped to have you, honestly. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Let's start off with just telling everybody who you are and what it is that you do.
Yes, my name is Maria Busted, and I own Pocampo. We make fabulously versatile bags that fit your life. They are made of weatherproof vegan fabrics adorned with reflective details, have lots of pockets, and many of them have the ability to attach to your bike or to carry your yoga mat or just go with you from day to day. And I started the business 5 years ago, so in 2009, we started with a pair of bike bags because the problem I wanted to solve with my line was that I love to bike to work or bike around Chicago anyway, and I wanted a bag that I could put onto my bike for when I was riding so I didn't have to wear it, and then when I got to my destination, just quickly pull it off and carry it with me like a normal bag. And to me, that seemed like such an obvious product considering how many people like to bike in cities and how that number is really just exploding now as the cities around the world are putting in more bike infrastructure and how more people are going to have the same issue of like one needing to carry stuff to wherever they were going but not having any good way to carry it. So that's where we started 5 years ago, and then the line has really just sprung from there. So we still have our bike bags, which is probably what we're best known for, but the line has grown to embrace all aspects of a modern, urban, active lifestyle, I'll say. So we have the yoga and the travel bags as well.
Sweet. I love it. I love your business. I love your stuff. And I'd love to hear your story. So, and by the way, I biked to, you will laugh because you're Chicagoan, I biked to a Cafe Saint Marie for a lunch meeting last week.
Mm-hmm.
And
good.
I don't have the, I'm not a cool biker, but I had this really cute purse, and I just hung it on my handlebars like an idiot. And it was so uncomfortable, and all I could think to myself was, darn it, I need one of those Pocampo bags.
Yes,
and,
you do.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I looked good when I got off, but I nearly wiped out about 6 times.
Mm-hmm.
So that was thinking about you. And you're being sort of, what's the word, modest? The Huffington Post, I am reading just a month ago, said that, talking about your bags, they said, this bag just destroyed the last excuse not to join your city's bike share. And it's about one of your bags, right?
Yep.
Tell me about it. How did you get
into
Huffington Post?
Well, that was just kind of serendipitous. So last summer, Divi launched in Chicago, which is a bike share system similar to the ones in New York and San Francisco, D.C., more and more cities are putting them in all the time. And most of them use the same bike, which has this awkward front basket thing. The basket is open on most sides, so whatever you put in there has a tendency to fall out. So it's kind of a faulty design. But last summer, I just fell in love with the bike share system. It's so convenient and easy. But I had that same kind of old issue where I wanted to carry more things on it, but I had a hard time kind of like securing them into place. And I was just thinking about how these bike share systems are just sprouting up everywhere and how more people are going to have that same issue. And I knew I would be able to design a bag that you'd be able to use for all the different kinds of trips, like to the grocery store, to the gym, but then would fit securely into that front basket. So that was my idea when I was talking about it with the different bike share systems, kind of hoping that they would help me promote it.
Mm-hmm.
And what they said was that the press loves bike share. Any press release you put out about anything to do with bike share gets picked up. And I thought, well, that's great because I'm going to need some press help when I'm launching this bag. So what they said was actually kind of true. We were just looking for some, like, Facebook filler one week, you know, and I had shot this video of an early prototype outside. It was still snowy. I just wanted to show the different bike share systems and our sales reps, like, what I was working on, what this bag was for, the different features. It was not, you know, it was just on a cell phone, just, like, a minute or two. We put it up on Facebook, and it just, like, all these shares and likes and comments, and the next day, the journalist from the Huffington Post wrote and said that she wanted to break it. So that's how
love it.
That came together. And so this was even before we had the bags kind of finished, you know. We're expecting them to launch at the end of June, so in about a month. So, yeah, so that was kind of like kicked it all off, and it's gotten a lot of press coverage since then as well.
I love this. And this is so smart because what I love about you and everybody I hope really understands this, and you know, I hope to be more like this and I hope everyone else to be more like this. You're like, look, I'm just making this video with my phone. I'm not going to make a big deal out of it. I'm just putting it up. You know, you're like, you're taking imperfect action to fill up some space you needed filled up, and you just did it. And then look what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you could have done is thought about it and said, well, I need to hire a videographer, and I needed this, and I need that, and then you just think about doing it, it would never happen, and you wouldn't have been in the Huffington Post, which is amazing. I mean, I know you've had a ton of good press, too, but this is really good coverage. I love it.
Yeah. And I think what we've realized is one of the things that people like about buying bags from us, like other small companies, is they really feel like it's relatable, you know? So we do a lot of our stuff is just kind of like very low tech because we want to give people that kind of intimate view into our world because we know that's one of the draws to us, you know? And if everything is too polished, then you just start to feel like it's a big company and you lose that relatability.
I totally get that, and I absolutely agree. Let me ask you this. So tell me how your business – okay, first of all, can you give us your website information? So if anyone's not listening to this on my blog, where I'll put everything in the show notes, they can see what we're talking about.
Yeah, it's just pocampo.com, and that's P-O-C-A-M-P-O.com, so it's pretty easy. You can go there, and our blog is there, our shop is there, information about the team, everything you pretty much need.
You have a really good blog. I love your blog. And if you want to see the Huffington Post article, just Google that up, Huffington Post, Pocampo, P-O-C-A-M-P-O, Bike Share. It comes right up, okay? And it was from March of 2014, and rock on for that, by the way. Okay, so tell me about when you first started your business compared to, you know, if you could tell me what you thought it would be like, and now you're into it 5 years, what it's like. I would love to know that.
Yeah, so when I started, I think I always wanted to start my own business. I feel like this is a natural path for me, but I did think it would be a lot easier. And I knew it was going to be hard. I didn't think it'd be like, you know, you just design something, put it online, and, you know, you're set. So I was ready for some hard work, and I guess the two things that I was not prepared for was just how complicated it is to make and sell things. This is something I totally took for granted before having to do it all myself. And previously I was working as an industrial designer at an agency. So I had been kind of through like the product development process. So that's what gave me the false sense of confidence, I guess I'll say, where like, sure, you do a little research, you design your product, you go through a cost reduction phase to hit your price point, you make it, and you send it, you know? And, I mean, that is kind of what you do, but now I understand how hard it is to get everything to just line up perfectly, that it chugs along. And I'm, like, kind of shocked that anything ends up in a store on time ever. Now that I know how complicated it is.
Well, when you were in
those little, all those little pieces have, like, you know, 30 things that have to go on for it to happen, right? And if there's one delay or one thing amiss in any of those stages, the whole thing just kind of, like, grinds to a halt, you know?
Oh, absolutely, especially in manufacturing. It's
yeah.
not like you can say,
yeah.
well, my labels are coming in next week. Just sew the rest and pop the labels on at the end.
Right,
no, no,
right.
No. You know, it's like I'm making a car. I'm in a factory. Just, you know, put those Mustangs together, and then, you know, the steering wheels would be in at the end. Just pop those on at the end. I don't think so. Okay, so two things you were prepared for was it's more complicated. I suppose when you were an industrial designer, you had a team that was, the actual production team. You designed it, and you had people who actually –
Right.
implemented the plan.
And
then
so
all of a sudden you're the team.
Yeah, you're doing it all. And how to manage all those different tasks and resist the urge to just work on the parts that you enjoy or that you know the best, you know,
yeah.
and try to give everything its due diligence is hard. So, like, even doing this interview, I'm kind of procrastinating because my project for today was to do forecasting for different styles so we kind of know what to order for the rest of the year and for next year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just very – takes so much effort. You know, my brain isn't wired that way, and I don't want to do it.
Oh, it's a lot of
but
brain
I will,
power.
But, yeah, it's, you know, just really forcing yourself to – be disciplined to do all those different parts when really you just want to do the parts that you like to do.
Oh, I so get that. Oh, my God. I used to put it off until the very last minute. Any of that forecasting or designing for the new season, terrible. Mm-hmm. So, okay, so there's two things you're not prepared for. Did I get them both? How complicated
is
it?
Oh, no, okay. So one was just how complicated it all is. And the second was how long it takes.
Oh, tell me about that.
Yeah, so I felt like I've always wanted, and I still do, Pocampo to be a big brand. And I knew it wouldn't happen overnight. But I think part of, like, the entrepreneur myth or just what you read about is that everybody has, like, these overnight successes. You know, if you're reading Fast Company or Inc. or any of those magazines, the story is always like, so-and-so had this idea. They made some prototypes. They showed it to some friends. The friends loved it and said, why don't you make this into a business? Okay. And then they make it into a business and they raise millions of dollars, or Macy's comes by and sees it and places an order for $1 million, and they're done, you know. And I didn't think that would necessarily happen, but I guess I kind of thought if you make a good product, good design sells itself, right? That, and people were really into it, it would just go tick, 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 you know, like it would just grow, and I would be all set. And instead, it's been definitely two steps forward, one step back, two steps forward, one step back. And so having the kind of perseverance and tenacity to keep pushing forward has taken a lot more effort than I guess I first anticipated.
Yeah, but at the same time, I've seen your business grow over the years, and you really have taken a lot of steps forward. Your business is very different now. It's growing a lot.
That's true.
Maybe it's not where you were thinking, but it certainly seems to be growing a lot. But tell me this. So your initial strategy was selling wholesale, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then can you walk me through that, like how you started out selling, how you're selling now? Has it changed? Is it the same? The old interwebs interrupt things?
Yeah, it definitely has evolved. And I think part of it, when I started, the internet commerce wasn't quite like how it is today. I mean, things were still being sold online, of course, in 2009. But
mm-hmm.
I felt like to make it big, you had to sell in a store.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe it still is kind of that way, but I don't know if it was just my background or whatever. But I always saw Pocampo as a wholesale business, and I saw us designing the bags, selling them to big chains, even though I couldn't really think of which ones would be quite right, and having them everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So when we started, you know, I did my research. I had my wholesale prices and the line sheets, and I was like, you just got to start somewhere. So I just went door to door to local Chicago shops who I thought would be interested in it and sold in some bags. But, and you know, that they didn't really sell well. And so I kept trying to troubleshoot what was the problem and kind of tweak either the bag design or the price or the packaging or the merchandising. But, you know, but deep inside, I always wanted to just land that big contract from a big store that would just make all those little problems go away.
Yes.
Yeah. And it was, you know, it took, you know, probably until just like the last 6 months, honestly, where I realized always wanting like a different customer was my problem, that I had customers that were very supportive and were good partners. And I was always like, yeah, I don't want to sell just six bags to you. You know, I want to sell 600 or 6,000 bags to somebody. And, I kind of took for granted, and this is just one example, I guess, took for granted something that I had that was really good because I was always picturing something else.
Wow. So that's powerful. And how did you stop this cycle? How did you even know you were doing that? I've made so many things
well,
like that in my life that I never
realized. What to me was, made me realize I was doing it was I was reading an article in Inc., I think, about Lady Gaga's manager, and she had just, like, fired him. And he was saying that, and he had worked with a lot of superstars before. I can't remember his name, but I'm sure if you Googled this, you would find it. What was so insightful to me about this article was that he finds these acts that are destined to be superstars, you know, like
mm-hmm.
they have it. But he makes them go to clubs and crappy music venues for a year or two because they need to learn how to work a crowd that doesn't want to be worked. They need to know what it's like to stand in front of people who are bored because it makes
wow.
you really hone your performance and get strong and, you know. And I realized that I wanted to skip that whole stage. I just wanted to be playing arenas, you know. And here I had my opportunity to develop those skills, and I wasn't doing it. So since I was, that really showed me, like, I think that same approach is appropriate for brands, too, and that you need a couple of years of incubation period to kind of be, get a little tougher, battered about, find your audience, find what really makes them want to, like, dance with you, you know, and not
mm-hmm.
just shoot for the arena right out of the gates. And so when I read that, I was like, oh, my God, that's totally the same with me. And here I am kind of playing in my little clubs. And instead of dreaming about the arena, I want to learn how to really work these clubs, you know.
Wow. I love that story. I'm going to look that
yeah.
up and link to that, too, because I want to read it. And what I love about that is not only that I find a lot of entrepreneurs, myself included, sometimes you have trouble looking at other industries and seeing
mm-hmm.
what can I take from this? How can I learn from this?
Mm-hmm.
And there couldn't be anything really more different than Lady Gaga and her manager. And but it doesn't matter because you're smart enough and resourceful and creative enough to look past that and say, oh, my gosh, I need to work these clubs. I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that's good
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, that's good. And so now since, you know, I realized that and I was kind of, I mean, it really was a moment of awakening for me. And that we never did a ton of, like consumer events or street fairs, any of that stuff. And part of it's because I'm a pretty introverted person, and so, like, standing outside doing small talk with people for a weekend just sounds really hard for me. But
mm-hmm.
another part was that I was like, no, Pocampo, I want this to be this big brand, you know, and big brands don't have a little tent at the farmer's market, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I, you know, read that article and I saw what I was doing wrong, I was like, no, we need to be making these really personal connections with people, because that's going to be our grassroots support, you know. They're going to say, oh, I met Maria or Shelly or any of the people who work with me. They were so cool. They're doing these great products. They're so passionate about it. Those are the things that you tell other people about, you know. You don't. And we had missed all these opportunities to give people those stories to share. So
wow.
The last, I mean, really starting this year, and now I have somebody on my staff and more who really love to do the events, so that kind of takes the heat off of me as an introvert. So if there's any introvert listeners, that's how I suggest you combat this problem. That you have people who really do love talking all day, and that you can just kind of be there and enjoy it, and, you know, talk to people for longer periods of time, so, you know, and just get to know people, and so that they can have a face with the brand.
Oh, that's great. And I have, I can tell you, I do deal with clients who come and say, I don't want to sell 6 bags to a store. I want, you know, thousands of dollars orders. And
yeah.
I tell them, they're just starting, I say, you know what, I can't help you, because I don't think you should do that. You know, I agree. It's like, I get the, I want you to sell that too, but first you got to make sure your product is good. But you've sold to some big stores. I know you were selling REI, and you've had a lot of different kinds of success. You were involved with that music festival.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us, what's been the, like, well, if you don't mind sharing, what's something that you thought would be just great for your business, but it turned out it wasn't what you wanted, or it didn't go the way you wanted, or you just changed your mind?
Well, that's true, because a lot of the things I thought were going to be, like, our ticket to the next level didn't really turn out that way, and actually REI is a good example. So, you know, part of the reason I think that we feel compelled to, like, get those big customers, I mean, the big orders, of course, are wonderful, but when you're talking to people about your business and they ask where you sell, if you can say an REI or Nordstrom, you know, their eyebrows just go up and they're like, oh, and then you feel really good about it. But if you say, oh, and some boutiques, they're like, yeah, of course, you know. You know, and so I feel like I'm the type of person that enjoys praise and likes it when people react like, oh, that's impressive, you know.
We all do, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, so I went to one trade show and I got a really good response. It was just like, out of an Inc. article. I'm like, oh, my God, it's happening, my moment, you know. I got purchase orders from REI and Title IX, some interest from some other larger companies. I just felt like we're moving to the next stage.
Mm-hmm.
And that made us kind of have to move a little bit faster on the manufacturing side than we're really ready to do. But, you know, I was like, here we go. Let's just hope for the best. And what started as I thought my lucky break actually turned into the worst nightmare ever because I had I knew that when we had started we were making our bags locally, and I knew that that price point just did not work in our market and with our customer. Like, that had made very clear. And so we were working with an overseas manufacturer to be able to offer them at a more competitive price. I mean, still not cheap, but just kind of in the range of where our competitors were instead of, like,
mm-hmm.
twice as much. And when I went to this trade show, we didn't really have anything. Like, we were just kind of just starting to talk with this Chinese factory, you know. So I
mm-hmm.
just kind of, like, took my best guess on what I thought the price would be. And this is maybe in August, and they're like, okay, but for our spring, you need to get it here in January. can you do that? And I was like, oh, sure. You know, even though in my head I was like, I don't even know who's making these bags, let alone if they can get them made in 3 months for this price. But it just felt like I wanted the business so bad. And you just read those stories all the time of people, like, stepping off the cliff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, oh, sure. You know, so I got these great purchasers. I was so excited. The factory was happy to see that I had it too, so we like kind of kicked everything into high gear, and it just, we didn't do enough quality control with the I mean, it was, you know, switching factories, it's like you have to start over pretty much because everybody's got a different process for ordering materials and producing, and we just kind of like shortcutted it.
Mm-hmm.
And what turned out was the bags came in late, and most of them are okay, but unfortunately the most popular one had a failure rate of 30%, like the shoulder strap would just rip out. And so what turned out, what I thought was going to be like the best year ever, where we got into, I think, like 18 REI stores and their like main locations. And if that went well, it was gonna, you know, like I just had to like, okay, here we go, here we go. It just like grinded to a halt. I had all these bags that I couldn't even sell. You know, I was in debt because I borrowed money to make them. And I don't even remember the original question. But
you know what? This is so fascinating, and I'm so appreciative that you're sharing. So, all right. So, and I remember this time, actually, when I visited you at this time.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It was a tough time.
Was really good that didn't turn out to be so good. That's what it was for me. I started saying I wanted to be big and have those high-profile customers so bad that when one came and said, let's do it, I was like, yes, finally, without doing the necessary work to make sure that I could do it, you know? And I think there's this tendency that I have for sure that I think a lot of entrepreneurs share where it's like you just want to will something to be, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want this so bad that it's just going to have to happen, you know? And unfortunately, reality does exist, and you can't, you know, make 18 new SKUs with a new factory that you never worked in 3 months, you know? I mean, maybe it could happen,
you know what?
But the chances are very low, you know?
But to be fair to you, this factory, as I recall, it's sort of a sister factory of the one that you work with in Chicago.
Yes.
So it wasn't like a complete
unknown. No, that's true. And she was overseeing the whole process, which is what gave me the confidence, was that she had made our bags for years here in Chicago, and it was always really good. And, like, the quality was good. It was more or less on time, and she seemed very confident, so I trusted her. And, you know, I learned a lot from that experience that I don't think she intentionally misled me. I think that she had thought her relationship with that factory was stronger, too.
Mm-hmm.
And also just when you switch production facilities, especially for going from domestic to overseas, where there's a lot more things that can go wrong, but that's not the time that you want to rush, you know?
Right.
And so if I could go back in time, I guess the older me would be like, tell them that you can't this year, but next year when you have it together. But knowing me, I probably would have just get too excited.
You know, that's a big carrot to dangle in front of an entrepreneur.
Yes.
REI, 18 stores, I would have done the same thing. So, but it didn't crush you at all. I mean, you're back and you're strong, man. So what did you do? How did you build your everything back up and your confidence and your store base and your business?
Well, actually, Jane, you kind of helped me turn around with this one because this was 2012 and I thought it was going to be the best year ever. I would have bought a car or something at the beginning of the year if I had had that much money. Just I felt so confident, you know, and to go from that point to, like, barely being able to get out of bed in the morning, just feeling crushed by all the poor decisions I had made and just, like, you know, the debt and the bags and not knowing which way forward, you know. And I remember we talked and you were like, well, let's slow down. Who's your customer? And I remember I said, I don't even know anymore. I really just wanted to, like, sell bags to whoever would freaking buy them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's how desperate I was feeling. And you can't build a business when you're in such a state of despair and frustration, you know, like it's a bad downward spiral. So at that point I was like, okay, let's just take it easy here. There's a reason why we started this business. That reason still exists. Who is our customer? And how can we serve him or her better, you know? And, it's hard to go from a big loss just because you feel like you have nothing. And you've lost a lot of credibility, too, you know, because people now look at our financial statements from that year and we're like, whoa, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And whereas when you're just starting off where you just have, you know, a little bit of profit or just a little bit of loss, it just seems like there's potential. But when, like, this thing, you know, plummets and you're like, oh, you know, people like,
mm-hmm.
I felt like, I feel, still, you know, even though it's been a couple of years later and it's gotten better, I show those statements to a banker and I feel like they can just smell like the stink of death on me, you know, even though I don't feel that myself. But that's kind of the look there, like, ooh, you know, we don't want anything to do with this, you know. And so it has been hard to, like, be able to put that behind me and to take the lessons from it and to continue to push forward as a stronger business. But being able to, like, refocus on who our customer is has really been the push that we needed, you know, because now we can go to those events and connect with people and get, like, the positive reinforcement that we are doing the right thing. I still go to a trade show, and, of course, I still want to get the bigger customer, but if they don't come by, I'm not heartbroken, you know, or if they come by but they want something that I know I can't do either. They need a price or they need a timeline or they want a style that I don't feel fits with us. I
mm-hmm.
don't feel bad with turning it down because I tried it, and it really sucked.
Yeah.
Trying to do
it.
Yeah.
No doubt. You know, I got to say, and I think you're, again, I think you're being a little modest. You went through this rough time, and you're like, oh, but I'm back. But you truly, truly are back. And you're selling an awful lot online. And I want to ask you one more question about that. So going forward, what's in the plans going forward? You're It seems like you've refocused on the customer, which is so important, and every customer is super important in your mind, no matter how big or small right now.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
What's the future? What's coming up next for you guys? What are you going to do?
Well, we are focusing down on our best-selling styles. So this was another place where I think that we erred, and part of it's just because I'm a designer, so it's really easy for me to design new stuff. Which I'm
yeah.
sure a lot of these other listeners have the same problem. So if anybody was, it's not really a problem. It's just, if any customer was like, you know, if you made this bag, we would buy them. Or if you did this with this, we would buy them. I'm like, oh, sure, no problem. You know, just sketch it up,
oh,
and
God.
There it is. And so our line had, like, ballooned to over 40 SKUs. And we're not that small. That was a lot to manage. We're bags. We don't have, like, apparel different sizes or anything. We didn't really need that many bags. And so now it's just been kind of my task is to constantly trim, you know, like, which ones have the most momentum and really kind of throw our energy behind those.
Great.
And the ones that don't, just kind of let them go.
I love that. And it's really hard to do, to edit out things that you love. So I really just have to thank you for being here today, Maria. This has been so awesome. You are so honest and willing to share with any new designer or established designer who's listening. You're my rock star. Thanks a ton. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
So let me ask you, listeners, did you like this podcast? If you liked it, please click the like button. And why not share it with your friends, put it on social media. I would really appreciate it if you spread the word and share Maria's story with more listeners. That'd be great. And tell me, what did she say that really resonated with you? Was there something that you heard, like the Lady Gaga story or something, where you're like, oh, my gosh, that speaks to me?
What mistakes have you made that you know you're not going to make again? Or how would you do things differently if you were starting over? That's your assignment. Leave me a comment in the blog underneath this podcast episode at fashionbrainacademy.com. Just Google up, search on my blog for Maria Pocampo, and you will find it there. Have an awesome, awesome day, and thanks so much for coming to the podcast today. Bye-bye.